Yeah.
Bill, can you tell us about the subsidy systems regarding agriculture?
Yeah, I will. The question is the subsidy systems. In Australia, we directly subsidise very little of our agriculture. We do directly subsidise a tremendous amount of our industry. We just were forced to give up $8,000 for every man, woman and child to a new silica industry coming to Tasmania to give them a nice a gift before they started up. And then we have to subsidise them with energy because we're selling them energy at below cost. Now, I don't see that I would ever get $8,000 out of a silica industry, and we're certainly going to get a lot of pollution out of it. And so our government gives us no choice about subsidising large industries. And I guess the managing director of that industry, a lot of people in the sugar industry, said to me, you know, the trouble with the country is all these layabouts on the dole. I said, there's gone sugar. I said, you just got a $9.5 million dole. You know, we can't subsidise layabouts like you. And we subsidise businessmen a tremendous amount. Can't afford many of those dole takers up in these high buildings, I tell you that. Well, the subsidy to agriculture in the United States direct, we've got good figures on, a bit hidden in Australia, it's not much different, it was $21 billion last year, and the product of the whole United States agriculture was $17.6 billion, and last year for the first time the product of home gardens went to $17.3 billion in food value, and there was no subsidy whatsoever from the government to home gardeners. Now, that direct subsidy is $21 billion to the farmers. In New Zealand, it averages $7,000 per sheep farmer to produce fat lambs from the government, which is fairly poor. Fat lambs are stored for the last 7 years. The freezer costs of the storage have exceeded the value of the lamb stored. That's all the public cost. They're about to dump the first 2 years in storage because it's freezer burnt and they can't sell it overseas. They can't give it to any poor people because it's already been paid for and the price is too high, so it's going into the Tasman Sea. And in prison, 35% of the subsidised land goes directly into dog food. And so there's a lot of madness on. So what we've got is an agricultural system which is no longer making any pretense to feed people who can't get food. All it is doing is supplying a commodity market which doesn't allow the material to go out as food. And almost all our wheat surplus is converted into methanol or some other industrial base. And now we've got a methanol glut, and by public subsidy we have to buy all the storage systems for that. And I won't let the methanol go because it could replace petrol, and that would worry BHP and Shell. So we're really just funding our own constant impoverishment. At the same time as we're doing that, 18% of Australians go hungry to bed, and over 40,000 of our own kids don't have, a meal a day. And we can't get that food to those people because the market won't let us give it away. We dug in all our potatoes this year, 40,000 tonnes in Tasmania, and we couldn't give it to the people in society who don't have any damn food. And that's a lot of people in this society. It's 18% of all of us don't have enough food. So that's a very strange system, and it's just getting worse and worse. We're producing expensive, publicly subsidised surpluses of food and increasing the number of people without food, and we're doing that month by month. What I'm saying here is we should attach those people to their own farms so they have direct food access. Farmers should start to produce the needs of our society, and we should fund them to do it. And we should not route that money through governments because it's really funding the industrial sector and the commodity market. It's making a lot of stockbrokers rich trading wheat. Somebody said of a load of wheat going to Africa recently, is that going to feed the poor? I said, don't be silly, that wheat's not for eating, it's for trading. We trade it over and then we trade it home again. And what we dumped on Africa was low-grade surplus, often dirty grains that we couldn't get rid of in the pet food market and which had been too long in storage. I think some of you may have seen them opening bags on some of those programs, and the bags be labelled wheat, and what falls out is a gritty grey powder. It's probably sweepings from the flour room floor or something, and people have been paid wheat prices for that commodity broker. And all of you may have seen those trucks sold to help get the aid in, and not one of those trucks would start. And that's just... that's how we're getting ripped off.
it's all of us getting ripped off. So we're not really interested in that sort of rubbish. In Aboriginal settlement in which I'm working, most of them are drinking water at 1,100 parts salt. The bore quality is reported to the health department by the mines department, and the health department has to approve the bore, and they've approved all of those bores, and we can only just grow vegetables in it, only just. And we've got 47% kidney failure in the Aboriginal population. And they've approved bores up to 2,300 parts salt, and that means death of all those people from kidney failure, and that's the Health Department of the Northern Territory. And I can't often get a measure of the salt in the bores. I've got to take it and have it done. And I have sometimes requested it. So we're really treating the Aborigines as a separate item, because we don't let our own people drink water over 700 parts salt. Or we shouldn't. I suspect we sneak a bit of water through above that. That's all supplied by government. There are 72 government departments dealing with Aborigines in Northern Territory. 70% of the total employment is based on the Aboriginal health problem or the Aboriginal poverty problem. And there is not one garden going into one place that the permaculture groups haven't planted on the ground. So what happens to the millions of dollars that go through to Aborigines is they never get through the government departments. When you've got to get more people in government departments serving Aborigines than there are Aborigines. And all people in government departments on $30,000 a year, and what I suggest, they all go home and we give the Aborigines $1 million a year each, because that's what it's costing. It's cost us just over that.
Tell us a little bit about the Aboriginal land rights
hike. Yeah, from the miners' people. Yeah. Well, you've got mining companies setting out now the bigger ads to wipe out the Aboriginal law of land. About 3 to 7% of Aboriginal people even live on country that was in any way Aboriginal. The rest aren't making any land claims. They're free to all and all the rural Aborigines. And really nothing good has happened to any of them. And already we're getting anti-Aboriginal before anything good's happened to them. And that's mainly through the mining companies. It's really just shameful. I think someday we're going to get the external commission come to Australia. For instance, of our Aboriginal children, 86% are grossly undernourished. Of all those, in their lifetime, all Aboriginal children will have had a chronic illness. Their life expectancy is falling because they've never been so sick in history. And in Alice Springs, 70% of them will be permanently deaf because of inner ear infection due to lack of vitamin C. And their ears are ruptured 3 times and the bones behind have rotted. And I look down these telescopes and all you see in here is just rot, both ears. And those kids will never hear. And all we're doing is sending out more teachers for a population which is going to grow up deaf, and we're going to have them with us for 50 years, 60 years. And if we don't stop that, we're building the problem of shocking proportions. 70% of them are going to go permanently deaf. They're all going to go deaf for a long period of their lives. It's a chronic infection, has to be treated in hospital for 9 months. The kids get behavioural problems because when they're little, they don't want to be away from their families for 9 months. We can't cure the behavioural problem. We can't cure the deafness. It's incurable. And we just fail to supply even one orange or a vitamin C tablet to those kids. And it's disgusting. The bottom line is, if you haven't got an orange into somebody's hand, you've done nothing, really. Anyhow, cheer up. We put in a couple of teaching gardens. We've got about 30 Aboriginal trained teachers. They've got horticultural certificates. They've got soil certificates. They're putting in home gardens at 10 a day in teams. And we're actually getting food into people's hands at a total cost of $8,000. And we've sold $40,000 worth of spare vegetables. A few people can cure it if you get the government out of the way. All there's a bloody government to get out of the way. I had a few of the mining companies to spend a little bit of money on nutritionists instead of bashing people. It's shameful behaviour, you know? That's ethical businessmen. Yeah, I've been out through there. They told me their market, up north of Broome or somewhere. They cut it for miles away. There's a good citrus garden out there. Yeah, a huge citrus. They're pitching a jar of people. None of that food gets, say, to Aboriginal people here.
I forget about Aboriginal households here. One thing that's much different from Adelaide, household size is very large, about 5.6 to 7 people, and about double ours per house. The income is extremely low, 46% of that income is spent on food, and none of them say they can afford fruit, but most of that food is bulk carbohydrates for the kids. And yet Aboriginal groups are also producing oranges out there past Walloona. But we don't have any food in these gardens here, and there's nobody whose job it is to match up production with want. I bet those guys up at Walloona have been taught to send their food to some public market where it's eaten by people who don't really need. And most of it would be going to waste, about 80% of it would be going to waste. Look, it's very easy to cure the problem of malnutrition in Australia. We could finish the job in 2 years. We haven't started to look at it. It's estimated that about 70% of people would buy it if it were available now, and that's as much as we want. We don't want any more of the market than that. We should get the other 20% and give them, you know, what they want, you know. Then it becomes Darwinian, see who survives. Now, I'd be quite happy to challenge him to a 10-year survival, you know, competition. I believe nobody in their right mind would prefer poisonous food to non-poisonous food. I mean, if you had an egg loaded with dildrin and an egg without it, what are you going to take? No, and they're being advised by people who don't care if they read the directions or not, you know. I mean, what is the old talk about programs, West Australian Radio? I was sitting in a car park chewing on a commercial pasty the other day, you know, sort of cursing my isolation. And I heard some guy on a radio talkback program advising some poor wretch to pour dildrin around his Rose Arbor post. And he said he'd tried that, he'd done it double strength, and he'd done it full strength. And would that be enough? And the guy said, yeah, that'll probably do the job. Probably do the job for the whole water supply under this city too, which is already done to San Francisco's water supply. You can't pump from any bore in the San Francisco region or in New Jersey or New Hampshire because they're all totally polluted with 86 organic chlorines from agriculture. And they're going to be there, they figure, for 400 years. So I don't know if you've looked at your bores in West Australia. There were guys piling dildrin down around their posts and you know, your own radio station telling them to do it. I would bet you're in at least as bad a position as San Francisco. I bet your water table's loaded to the nines with this stuff. Yeah, it's possible for us to set up food analysis laboratories ourselves, and I think it's safer to do so. And I know very good analysts will come across because I know analysts who found high levels of DDT in cheese and wanted to announce it and have been sacked. Now we want all those analysts that have been sacked working for us. And I don't think anybody will use other services if we set them up because we're stupid enough to be honest.
In the metropolitan area here in Perth, for example, what poisons are there in fruit and vegetables?
Right. Well, you've got lots of use of dildrin. You've had the heaviest use of DDT anywhere in Australia, and I think it's still legal. You've got probably about another 80 chemicals being used on your farms and in your food, and I've seen producers dipping the food in the cases before it goes to market in the chemical, not spraying the trees, dipping the case quantities of food. And I said, would you eat that stuff? And I said, not on your deli, we wouldn't. And I think Dennis McCarthy, who introduced me here, was working on a strawberry farm. Dennis, weren't you? Yeah, what did they put on? Something. DDT. They sprayed DDT on the day they sent the strawberries down to Perth, and Dennis was driving a truck, and they poured oil on the pallets and that, and he went down to the tip and tipped it. Then he went back and told the strawberry guy he just tipped all his strawberries off because he'd done an illegal thing, and it was illegal for him to have done that. But listen, that guy is probably picking up those punnets and actually dipping them in DDT solution so they're not going to get insects on the waiver market. And that is typical behaviour. That's not atypical behaviour. All your spuds are living with stuff. You guys don't even know what you're getting because before they occupied my testator, as they peeled them. It's true. Your ag department don't test unpeeled potatoes because they don't want to find out what's on the damn peeler. No, I thought they're recommending it, you know. What's on it, Dennis? Deal with something else and something else. There's three things on your spuds that I know about. There's probably 10. I only come over here every 2 or 3 years and there's some old hair-raising stories, you know. You hear about 2 days and you can find out practically anything you want to know. And I mean, we're personally involved sometimes with growers. What's the stuff that apricots get, brown rot in the middle? I don't know what the chemical is you spray for that. That's what they dip them in before they sell them to you. So you get them just nicely charged. They won't rot for months. Neither will you. Yeah, Dennis wants me to talk about common work, which is one of the strategies of land use, in which you take a farm and you imagine how it could be, and you start to put it in place. It's owned by a trust, not by any person, and you let people come on and take up these things like growing the honey, growing the firewood and so on. And there's one running in England, and the whole of the purchase capital and the investment capital into research that went into it was repaid in 6 years by the people on the farm. That is, all the money that went into it, which was considerable, was repaid in 6 years by the endeavours on the farm, and then they got this huge extra capital because they're still going on putting 10% of gross into the common work fund. So the people who didn't own any land now own that farm. And they just bought a farm in Africa and they're all off to tell the Africans how to do it. And they said they'll get their money back in Africa in 6 years by teaching Africans how to farm for their own self-reliance and funding them to do it, and they say that all their money will come back too. So, you know, it's only people on the ground, on farms, who have got a lot of common sense who are doing anything sensible. Governments don't seem to be capable of it. I don't think governments are the way to run a country. They're in and out in 3 years. Whatever one does, the other one undoes. And, you know, they've got what they call soil conservation groups and departments. And year by year, our soil erosion problem increases every year. So what in the hell are we paying them for? Frankly, I think the way to run a country is to hire in a group of consultants to set 50-year farming projects and get into a 50-year projects. We're not going to stop soil erosion with 3-year governments or with soil conservation departments or agricultural departments. Since they've started work, the problem has worsened. And that's true of everything. Yeah, we've got problems with social welfare, we've got more people on welfare, or more people hungry than before we had those departments. They don't grow no cabbages, you know. Those guys just eat. I'm a bit radical, aren't I? I get very angry, actually.
Some
taxes against the seed monopolies. Yeah, it's totally like the man you're not going to vote for if you let PDR through. That's it, that's the end of it for him. He doesn't want to give up his $60,000 a year and his garden aeroplane ticket and his retirement pension and, you know, his mistress up in Canberra, you know. Just tell him he hasn't got your vote. And if you belong to a society, let the society tell him that he hasn't got their vote. And if you want to scare the daylights out of him, have the whole society run against him. Now, when your Department of Minister for Agriculture votes for PVR, he's voting to put you into the hands of external power. And he allowed the total sellout of all our seed companies to those four companies. He didn't say a word about it. Plant variety rights legislation. And they keep on reproducing into Parliament. And we keep fighting it, and they keep taking it out. And it's secret up to the minute they put it in. We can't get a draft of it. Because they've been well paid to hand us over. You can buy an Australian politician for as little as $30,000.
What do you think long-term ecological
and political consequences? Oh, total wall down. I mean, they're right in front of you, right? Increasing desert, more soil erosion. We've got 15% of our soils left in reasonable condition. That's all we've got left. You've got 0.07% of your forest left, you know. Your groundwater, you've got increasing use of pesticides, herbicides and biocides. You know, what do you think the future is? You've got more cars on the road, more acid rain, right? More unemployment. You just have a little guess for yourself. Just take it all forward. More people hungry every day. More homeless kids. And you're living in a good country. What do you reckon the future is?
Well, I spend a bit of time looking into it. I haven't
been through. No, I think we're limping out as fast as we can limp it. I think we've lost our guts and we haven't taken our own fate into our own hands, and I think we're a lot of wimps. Information and technology? I think it's a tool. You know, so what do I think of a spade? If you use a spade to cleave your neighbour's skull, it's a silly thing to have done with a spade. If you're digging, you know, a plot to show somebody out a garden, it's a damn good tool. Tools don't have value, it's our use of them. Information technology, yes, we can use it. You know, that's probably the only saleable thing left in the whole world, information. And I'm selling you information now, it's not costing you much. And I want you to sell this information, and I want you to be able to make a modest, miserable living like I do at selling information, you know. And if we can sell enough information, we can change the world, but at the same time, we've got to put our action groups into place to act on the information. We can't have what I call the academic fallacy, because I've told you, you're going to cure it. That's not true. It's only going to sign you up in an investment company that you're going to cure it. It's only going to fund you to do something that's useful towards the whole thing that you're going to cure it. It's only when we actually put our money in ethical investments we cure it. And we've got miserable lots of money, you know. Sometimes my first ethical investment was $20 and my second one was $150, you know. But boy, it adds up. It really adds up. Oh, that's okay, you know. I mean, I can't help people. You know, there are lots of people who don't want to look after women and see the wolf, right? But, you know, what you have to do is analyse your water. Now, at least in the United States, which is really more polluted, I think, than we are, the public authorities analyse your water for all these pollutants, and they issue bulletins on the pollutants, and they close down the wells. But they've warned the Americans that 800,000 people in San Francisco have no choice, but at least you know what you're drinking even though you've got no choice, because there are no other sources of water. And their water hit the same price as refined petroleum this year, exactly gallon for gallon. I've got a hippie mate up in Adirondacks, he had his supply analysed, he trucks into town, he stops at his garage, the garage keeper gets 100 gallons of water and he gets 100 gallon petrol credit. And that price of water is going up higher than petrol. And what they're doing is, Norway doesn't run any oil tankers anymore. They're all cleaned out. It runs snow melt into eastern United States. New Zealand is making a port down at the end of its glaciers to try and run water on the west coast of the United States, because you don't want to go looking for oil wells anymore. What you want to go look for, can you find one clean spring? That's your oil well. And I doubt whether you'll find one clean spring.
How long do you think the system's got that they don't do something
about it? I don't know. I mean, 9 years ago, very good scientists in Concord in Europe said it's too late, you know. Nothing's happening, nothing's changing, it's too late. I really think the only hope that I've had is a huge amount of capital being pulled out of the system and transferred to this. And until that started to happen, I didn't think we had a hope, because the people handling the capital are totally detached people. They don't live on the ground, I don't think they touch the ground. They leave those high-rise buildings and float through there in the helicopters and settle somewhere in the upper-class suburbs, and that's the way they go back to work. I don't think they touch the ground. I don't think they've seen anything of what's happening on the ground. They're not looking for the sort of information we've got, and I don't want to know about it because they really are responsible for it. But until we started to switch this money over, I don't think we had a hope in hell. But if we switch it over, then we can put the things into place that we want. And they're real simple things. And they can't hurt anybody. It's totally harmless investment. Forests, clean water, gardens, markets, information, can't hurt anyone. So you can go wholehearted at this, you know. You can't go wholehearted at being a welfare officer. That's the cleanest you're going to get water. Yeah, the next fraction of a second that hits the ground is going to be dirtier. Now, it's going to come down with a bit of lead in it, probably. It's going to come down with a few acidic particles. And what you've got to have is a little lump of limestone in your tank, and that's it. That precipitates that out. You've got to have a hard water in your tank. And then have it tested, and it probably right as rain. Then you can sell petrol. One thing to watch out for, last time I was here, a guy put a tank up in Les Murdy, and the whole street took up a petition to have his tank torn down.
and the council asked him to remove it. It was unsightly and it smacked of the rural areas, and he was living in a suburb that was, you know, up there with it. I just hope the neighbours don't come along and shoot holes in your tank for you or anything. You've got to put a concrete tank up. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about aerial particles, you know. That's the cleanest rain's going to get, you know. You're not going to get it any better. I bet you can't get it anywhere near as good. You know, what you're drinking now is pretty horrid stuff compared to what you're going to get. So I'd be worried about what you're drinking now, whereas you're starting to worry about what you're going to be drinking off your own roof. You know, if you get into that stage of worry, you're in real trouble. I keep getting people arriving in Stanley, Tasmania, saying, is there a pure airstream here? We can't live anywhere else. You know, I mean, we can't give up like that. We could catch all our drinking water in tanks from our roofs, and there should not be permitted to be any laws against that. You know, that's a basic human right, you know, to drink the water you catch. You know, you can't, it's almost a basic human right, you can keep six chooks. We need to rewrite the laws, really. I mean, you can have chookless suburbs where people can go and elect to live without chooks. But, you know, they should be sort of like idiot reserves or something. I mean, in the United States, you can't keep domestic animals in the city, so the garbage cans would be easily 60-gallon garbage cans. The ownership of dogs is huge, and they're big dogs, and all of them can pull over those garbage cans. And in New York and Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, your chance of getting bitten by rats is 21 times higher than it is in Perth. And rat bites are very common. So because you can't keep domestic animals, you've got all this food wasted, you've got bulk rats, bulk flies, bulk disease, and you've got an equal biomass of animals eating this stuff down to those open barges in New York and eating all this waste. Then they go and bathe in Central Park, which is New York's water supply, and they just carry about everything, you know. So once you get so nice, you can't keep domestic animals. All you keep is rats, cockroaches, flies, seagulls, and, you know, crows, and dogs. Dogs' food is the largest single purchase of the Australian consumer. Pretty weird society. Pretty well what I told you about. So we've had some horrific analyses of individual parts of our food. They are largely suppressed, for instance, and they're even suppressed at the federal level. The CSIRO Division of Food Industry told me when I was in Canberra that they'd measured the cadmium content of the green foods on sale in Canberra, because the superphosphate that we're using for Christmas Island had high cadmium and uranium levels. It had 40 parts uranium per million and a lot of cadmium. And all of this is in our food. And I found that this was about four times health limits. And they were ordered by the chief of division to suppress that report. And I said, why? And he said, because if you don't, I've been told to sack you. So we won't know. Australia's just full of namby-pamby people. And why shouldn't we know we've got cadmium in our food? Why shouldn't we reject those green vegetables because they've been grown with superphosphate? That's at federal level. That's in the Australian Capital Territory, and the work came done from federal politicians to suppress that report. We don't want that report, and you're not allowed to release it, and you sack anybody who tries to release it. So they gave it to me. So I announced it on radio, so it got in the paper. So those guys got into trouble. But a lot of scientists have got into trouble, and a lot of scientists have been sacked because they spoke up. And for acid rain, I reckon there's more scientists sacked than blokes signed on acid rain. In the United States, you mention acid rain to a scientist, he goes white and he walks away. I don't want to tell you, he says. I don't want to tell you. That's just ridiculous. However, they tell me, and I tell everybody. And I name departments, I name individuals, I name chiefs of departments. If I can find out the politician that said these guys will get sacked, I'll name him too.
What about the Freedom of Information Act?
No, I don't know anything about that act. It was subsequent, I think, to this anyhow. I think it's very, very recent. And I think we should be able to screen a lot of food analysis reports if you get onto that. And I reckon we ought to want a team on it. You know, I think you should be able to spring a lot of reports that simply are not out as public knowledge. For instance, just have a look at the cadmium content of green vegetables in your stores. It'll be very interesting. It's very, very bad in Canberra. Just have a look at the DDT in your dairy products. It's very bad. Just have a look at your what do you call the stuff, margarine, and see if you've got any minister stocks left in there, because that, in your milk index, you can read what that does to you. You don't want to get it on your skin. Swallow it by all means, but don't get it on your skin. You know, it's like Colonel Sanders' chickens. Lick your fingers, but don't eat the chicken. I think that's a nice lot of questions, all very sensible and to the point. And what I would propose that you do is most of you have to go home. We've been here an hour past our time or something, and I haven't had an evening meal yet either. And I'll wait a little while most of you go home, and people really think they'd like to get into a bit of ethical investment or a bit of action. We can gather quietly down, we'll take your names, and we'll let you know what we're going to do, and we'll have separate meetings of Perth people, and that'll probably happen after I leave here. And would you convene them, Dennis? Would you convene a meeting of ethical investors? Yeah, and Miles will. Where's Miles? Stand up, Miles. Miles has saved up $450, and he's willing to start an ethical investment company, and he wants some help. He wants some help in accounting, in finding things. It's his $450, right? So you've got a company, and you want a lot of help. Because it takes a lot of us to run those things properly. So if you want to help him, stop behind, and we'll let you know when you can, when he's got it registered. And anything you want to do on your own, I would cheer you on, you know. And thanks for listening. Have a happy evening.